Our community connection is in central Pennsylvania, where Mei Ling Krantz, CEO of the nonprofit Transitions, offers women options to advocate for themselves in cases of domestic violence. Mei Ling Krantz takes the story from here.
Transitions has been around for, we're just coming up on our 50th anniversary. So 1976, we were incorporated, and I think really from the origins of the grassroots movement of supporting survivors in their needs, bringing people to the forefront of providing them an opportunity for safety and feeling empowered in their lives, feeling safe in their lives, and re-engaging in their communities in a way that if you're in a situation where there's power and control, is really difficult. And so the illustration on our website that you're referring to, this bird coming out of a cage, is getting past that level of control and finding some freedom and standing on your own two feet and being able to re-engage in your world in a way that allows you to be part of your community, to feel safe.
It seems as though relationships have become so much more complex and distancing. Supposedly meeting someone and taking them for face value based on a photo online and maybe a profile that's not quite true.
We all go into this idea of engaging with someone else with the greatest of intentions, and we don't always think about all the other pieces that have to fall into place for that to be healthy and supported. And so it starts out in a really positive way, and then you find yourself learning about all the other things, the other person, the nuances of who they are. And sometimes that doesn't work. And so when we talk about relationships, it's really on a spectrum. Is it healthy, or is there a point where there are some unhealthy habits of someone? Does it become toxic at some point? And does it become abusive? And so it really is a spectrum. Both people that are engaged are contributing things as individuals. If it becomes toxic or abusive, who is the person that's creating a situation that they are the one in power in a relationship? There are back and forths in relationships, but in abusive relationships, there's one person who is positioning themselves to be in that role of power and control.
But what constitutes something that would be borderline abusive and I need to get some help for this?
We want people to really think through, you know, what is happening? Do you feel good about your relationship? Do you feel safe? Are you able to come and go as you please? Are you able to hang out with your friends, engage with your family? Or are there parts of a relationship where the other person, your partner, is controlling those types of things? They don't want you to spend time with friends and family. Maybe they don't want you to have a job. Maybe they don't want you to have a bank account. Maybe they want to control the finances. Is there some level of where the other person in your relationship is controlling you in a way that doesn't feel safe, isn't supportive of your own personal endeavors? In a relationship, you hope that you have shared interests, but you should still be able to maintain those individual interests. In an abusive relationship, that tends to be overshadowed, where the other person is telling you who you are, what you can do, where you can go. Taking a look at those things is really important, because there does come a point where you can assess, is your relationship getting to the point where it's becoming unhealthy? And that's an opportunity where you could have a conversation with your partner to say, can we work through this? Or does it immediately go into being toxic or violent? I think a lot of times people think about abusive relationships really just being about that physical violence. But in domestic violence relationships, there are flags that happen before that.
What are some of the signs a person needs to look for?
Most survivors will tell us that there's been some level of economic control. I can use your credit wherever I want to. You can't have a car. So there's all these things that sort of set there in what is unhealthy, but it is truly economic abuse. And then you have components where, is it psychological abuse? Are they calling you names? Are they putting you down? Are they talking badly to you or in front of you, about you, to your friends, your family? And then sort of where does that progress to potentially? Are you not allowed to leave your house without permission? In a digital age, are they tracking you on your phone? Are they able to check on their phone as to where you are? And then, of course, the more commonly accepted understanding of what domestic violence specifically is people view domestic violence only as that physical piece. Are they hitting you? Are they pushing you? Are they shoving you, kicking you? You know, have they strangled you? And so that tends to be what people believe domestic violence to be, but it's the spectrum of so many other things that lead up to that more physical violence piece.
How is it, Mei Ling, that we're unable to see some of those types of behaviors? Why are we so blindsided?
Well, I think that we put our best face forward. In the beginning, it may be easy to overlook because your desire is something new, fun, and exciting. As it progresses, you find out more and more about someone. Someone who is a true perpetrator, they tend to be manipulative. They tend to know how to hide those characteristics or traits in their personalities so that when they do start a new relationship, they can hide behind a mask of, this is who I want you to see versus this is who I really am.
Over the years, relationships have changed. Even looking at our mothers and our fathers, how they met and how they had this courtship, and then they kind of knew the families a little bit better. But now things are so different.
Yeah, I think historically, relationships tended to be a little more private. We didn't have this digital age where a lot of things were public on social media, or we were using technology to communicate differently. And so things that were happening in your home were easier to keep private. And I do think that violence was happening in homes, but there was a point where those things were considered normal in a relationship. Probably in the 70s, we really started talking more about how this isn't normal, this isn't acceptable. And that's kind of where transitions sort of kicked off as an organization. It was really a grassroots movement in the Susquehanna Valley where women gathered around a kitchen table to say, we're missing resources for mothers who are single moms or are going through a divorce. Behind the scenes that there's control, there's been physical violence, and we've been keeping this secret because there is shame to being in a relationship where you know what's happening is wrong. You potentially put blame on yourself for it, but at no point is it your fault. And so how do you step beyond that and say to someone else, I need help, and I know what's happening is wrong, and I don't know how to get past that. And so we started talking about these issues of women where there were gaps, and that really just kind of progressed into, we don't have resources for individuals who really are in very unsafe situations. That really kind of kicked off the movement of, how do we get people who are unsafe into safe situations?
Has domestic violence changed over the decades? Do you see changes as to how people are being treated and the reactions to the way they're being treated?
What used to be happening is a little different now. Abusers can use technology to abuse their survivors. They can use it to stalk them. They can use it to terrorize them. They can use it to share personal information. They can use it to destroy their credits. So there's a lot of ways that technology has added to the complexity of abuse. For 50 years now, we've been working on, what are the best prevention methods? How do we teach people about healthy relationships? How do we teach people to communicate effectively with each other? How do we build enough resources that when someone needs help, that they're able to access that help? But there are a lot of challenges that go into that. We often hear from survivors who get to that point with their partner, I love this person, but I don't love what they're doing to me. And I know what they're doing to me isn't healthy. I know what they're doing to me isn't safe. But if we could just get rid of this part, I love this person. And so separating it is hard sometimes because you're asking someone to be able to put their emotions on hold and recognize this other piece of it.
What if children are in the middle of this situation?
Historically, as a society, we think that family units stay together. And so there's still this idea of, you know, if you have children with someone, that person is who you should be raising your children with. And I want my child to have their mom or their dad in their lives. What they don't always think about, but don't know how to navigate, is that when children are witnessing violence in the home or unhealthy relationships or intense arguing, it's not healthy for them either. It's not setting an example for them to grow that skill on their own either. If you're in a relationship where your resources are controlled, where are you going to go? If you're lucky, maybe your community might have homelessness programs. And then in Pennsylvania, obviously, we have domestic violence programs that do provide emergency shelter. Those things are temporary. And so how do you build the resources to leave and find somewhere safe to be and be able to stand on your own two feet? And that's sort of where organizations like Transitions fill those gaps.
I was just going to ask you, some of the wonderful programs that you have at Transitions that do help people move from one phase of their life to the next phase and feel that this is the next best thing for me.
It was interesting. We were sort of looking through a box of some of our historical information. And even back in 1976, 77, as they were kicking off services for women, there is a newspaper article that actually talks about a support group also for men. And so it was really neat to see that transitions, probably without knowing it, were already progressive, thinking about it's not just women who need support. Transitions started out as a domestic violence service provider, but we've really grown over the last 50 years to go from just serving domestic violence survivors to being a comprehensive crime victim center. We provide services primarily for domestic violence survivors, sexual assault survivors, human trafficking, and then other violent crimes. We really approach the work that we do as being available, but it's survivor driven. We cannot prescribe what somebody else needs. We just want to be available for them, and we want them to walk through the doors and be able to say, here's what I need. We want people to know they can seek services with us. We can talk about their options, but at the end of the day, they're in control of the bus. They're the ones that have to tell us what they need. And if we are the right service organization to help them, we are. And if we aren't, we connect them to other community resources. Being a comprehensive center, we have a 24-hour crisis hotline. When you call our center, you get a live advocate. These are individuals who have intensive training. We safety plan with them. We talk about what their needs are. And then we talk about what else can we help with. We have two emergency shelters. So if someone really needs to physically flee the location they're in, we can bring them into one of our shelters, or we can connect them with one of our sister programs across the state of Pennsylvania. So if they need to really leave the area, we can reach out to another program to see if they have an opening and get them out of that community and somewhere else safe. But from that point, we are able to offer them one-on-one crisis counseling. Our services have grown that we have a therapist on our team that if someone needs more intensive support, they can work with our therapist. We have a legal advocacy team. So these are our advocates who will sit down with survivors, talk about what their options are around seeking a protection order. What does this really mean for you? At every point that we're providing a service, we're reassessing and re-safety planning with a survivor. All of our services are free to survivors who qualify.
But you're putting everything in an order for them. This is the next step that needs to happen or should happen. And then they have that decision as to whether or not they'd like to undertake that step, correct?
Correct. They're always in control of the process. We're just there to provide them the options and empower them through, you know, here are your choices. How can we help you? We have a really, really expansive housing program for survivors who are either fleeing, and it can be domestic violence or sexual assault or human trafficking survivors who need permanent housing. Historically, programs like ours had that safe emergency housing component. We've been able to grow that into being able to provide longer-term support, so short-term, medium-term, or long-term rental support for survivors. So getting them into permanent housing, giving them that option to leave, not having the finances to be able to get an apartment, to do that first month's rent, that security deposit. I think people even not in abusive relationships are finding that challenging these days with the cost of what the rental market looks like. And so we're able to do that for survivors. So getting past that emergency shelter and then getting into permanent housing and finding safety in their own environment. Our Farrell Family Justice Center is a safe custody exchange. So families who share custody of their children but don't want physical contact with each other, parents can engage with our services so that they're able to exchange custody of their children in a somewhat controlled environment, so the kids have a positive experience with both parents, even if one of them is the abusive party. Families who still want their children to be engaged with both parents, but in a safe, structured environment that they then have support.
Up to this point, Transitions has proven to be a multi-purpose safe haven for anyone undergoing any kind of domestic abuse. But what about prevention programs? Do you offer prevention programs, especially to students?
So we're working with K-12 students in school districts in our communities. We're going in, we're talking about those basics of how do you prepare young individuals to be able to look at relationships in a healthy way? What is a healthy relationship? Some of that is talking about bullying. Some of that is talking about consent. What does it mean to consent to anything in your life, let alone when you're engaging in a relationship with someone? It doesn't matter what your gender is. It doesn't matter how you identify. If you are someone who has been victimized, whether that's a heterosexual relationship or a homosexual relationship, or maybe you weren't in a relationship at all and you were sexually assaulted or raped. It doesn't matter where you come from. Violence and abuse spans any population. So it's not isolated. Anybody who needs our services, we're available. We absolutely want people to know that if they're from a diverse community, if they're from a marginalized community, if there's something about their culture that is unique, we are still there. We are still available to serve them.
Do you ever get any kind of responses from people who have been helped by transitions?
Oh, absolutely. At every one of our staff meetings, we talk about mission moments, and we give the opportunity for our team to share things that they've either heard from survivors, heard from community allies, that they're able to share good things back to the team about what is happening. And we have survivors who will send us notes. We have survivors who will share that they're willing to speak in school districts about their experience, not only in being a survivor themselves, but how transitions has helped them. It's always really rewarding when you have somebody coming back and saying, I reached out to your organization and here's how my life has changed. It is really rewarding for my colleagues and team members to hear all the work that they're doing, that we are helping people find safety.
What drew you to this occupation? Why did you feel the need to help people?
Growing up, I had the idea that I was going to be a psychiatrist. I thought, that's the job I'm going to have. I know that's a really odd thing for a young individual, but I grew up in a safe, stable family, but I grew up with a parent who was a survivor, and they were a survivor of childhood sexual abuse and human trafficking. For human trafficking really had a strong definition to it. So as a young child, my siblings and I knew that our mother had gone through abuse. I ended up pursuing a degree in psychology with a concentration in biopsychology. And what I really learned in that young professional experience doing direct service, working with these young women, was all of them were survivors of abuse in some way. And that had led them to being in a group home. Yes, I was the child of a survivor, but now essentially helping young individuals who are themselves survivors figure out how to navigate their teenage years and get back into feeling safe and being able to have a normal teen experience. The survivors or the people who are in the experience themselves really are the ones who need to be in control of their experience. It's not my job to tell someone how to live their life or what they need. We each have a different path, and our role is to provide the services. Their role is to tell us what their needs are. Transitions was well on their way as an organization, letting survivors really be empowered in their own lives to say, here's what I need to step back into my community. And so I've gotten to see just really over the last 15 years, the growth of the movement so that they have that full array of support. We really operate in that model of empowerment, that they tell us what their needs are. It's beyond transitions. It is a community effort. If it's a service that we don't provide, we're able to get those survivors connected to those other services.
You have been able to empower a lot of survivors through the wonderful programs you offer at Transitions. And when you see the progress that's being made, how has that empowered you?
It's exciting that we're at a milestone year for us, 50 years. We're far from being able to eradicate violence in our communities, but we have continued opportunity to grow, and not just as an organization, but we are part of this larger network in our own little regions, but also across the state of Pennsylvania. Are we doing it the best way we can at this point in time? Because at the end of the day, what we want is that survivors have everything they need. The more we continue to step into the public eye to say we're here, the people that are seeking services are your friends, your neighbors, your colleagues. And we have really an obligation, I think, to support each other in a stronger way. And some of that is saying, here we are.
A very meaningful conversation with Maylene Krantz, Executive Director of Transitions, offering guidance and options to those in domestic abuse situations. The organization is celebrating its 50th anniversary of service in the Central Susquehanna Valley, providing programs, services, and great compassion to help people get back on track and live their best lives. For WVIA's Community Connection, I'm Lisa Mazzarella.